Get your hands off that mouse. The Andy Finn Show will be right back.
Yeah.
And the Andy Finn Show is right back. Here is the Finn Man and Mike. We're moving on to Rumsfeld's role here. So this is the Bob Woodward's new book. And the question is, should we replace Donald Rumsfeld as Secretary of Defense as we move to the second term of the Bush administration? That was the question facing the Bush transition team and President Bush himself. And there's quite a bit of evidence that Andy Card played a role here. There was general agreement that it would be good to clean house and have Rummy move on. But Cheney was against it. And I'm doing a quick summary here of what's in the excerpts that were printed in today's Washington Post from Woodward's new book, State of Denial, Bush at War, Part 3. And while the first two were quite favorable to Bush, this one, of course, is not. And it's not favorable to Rummy. So it argues here that a lot of people wanted to replace Rumsfeld, and Cheney recommended strongly against it. And he basically said, Cheney did, that Rumsfeld's departure, no matter how you spin it, would only be seen as an expression of doubt and hesitation about the war. And it would give the critics of the war momentum, and soon they'd be after Cheney and then Rumsfeld. The argument was, you don't give up one of your soldiers, people will just keep attacking. But what's interesting about that, of course, is that you see it in political terms primarily rather than the possibility of correcting a mistake. In any case, Cheney was pretty insistent that Rumsfeld stay, and so Bush ended up listening to that. What's interesting, though, is some other things they say about Rumsfeld, about his arrogance and that. It turns out that the claim is made here, and Condi Rice has already denied it, but we'll have to see how this goes. This is another denial, but it was told that Rumsfeld refused to take Condi Rice's calls when she was calling about the transition and the occupation and planning from the State Department, essentially. And, of course, this would have been back when she was National Security Advisor. So there were other examples of Rumsfeld's behavior, saying in the middle of a briefing that people shouldn't be taking notes here. People should put away their pens and pads. He sometimes didn't bring enough copies of his reports. And so at some briefings, Condi Rice had to look on with somebody else. And a lot of the Pentagon briefings that went on, and they believe Rumsfeld was behind this, they would pass out copies of the reports right before the meeting. And after the meeting, they'd collect them, and you couldn't take them with you.
Hmm.
And so real tight control of information is the one argument. The other piece of it is that when he refused to talk to Rumsfeld was trying to get things going. And so when his advisor, Stephen Hurwitz, went to Rumsfeld in 2002, this is before the Iraq War started, he went into Rumsfeld's office and said, quote, according to Woodward, quote, "You're not going to be happy with what I'm going to tell you, but you are in the unique position of being the sole person who could lose the president's re-election for him if you don't get something straightened out. Now that I've got your attention, you've got to focus on the post-Iraq planning. It's so screwed up. We will not be able to win the peace." And he warned Rumsfeld that parts of the Defense Department, including Doug Feith, were screwing up, and that state and defense were fighting, and that it was so bad that at the agency meetings, at times, they were more like shouting matches. And that the post-war planning was seriously off track, and the Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, needed to intervene personally. And so, apparently, Rumsfeld didn't say too much, but he called a surprise Saturday meeting with Feith and with others involved, and I get the impression that he didn't do research first. Now, if you're a good manager, any good executive manager knows that before you call a meeting, you get your ducks lined up. You just don't have somebody else put up a an agenda and show up. You figure, if there's something broken, you figure out what it is first. You figure out how it's going to be addressed. And you go into that meeting with a plan. I mean, that is basic. It's probably basic undergraduate business degree, but it's certainly MBA stuff. It's basic stuff. It's not, you get to the CEO level, you don't need to be told that that's how you manage meetings. Rumsfeld goes into the meeting apparently cold, as near as I can tell, and says, what's going on here? We've got to get this on track. And so it turns out, obviously, the lack of security was the problem, and that was the shortage of troops. Well, there's this whole argument that's been going on for 3 years about whether or not Rumsfeld is the guy who determined that you send a certain number of troops and no more. And he's always said, I've given the generals everything they want, and so does Bush. But in fact, it's been pretty clear for some time that Rumsfeld was behind this idea of a light, fast military. You just send in as few troops as you can, you get the job done, and you get out. And so Woodward makes it clear through his whole conversation in this book, in this area, that Rumsfeld was the decision maker behind this, but that he goes out of his way not to leave his fingerprints on the decisions. Which is interesting. He makes the decisions. He makes them pretty unilaterally. He says he listens to input, but he doesn't seem to learn. And then he doesn't really want people to know that this was his decision. He wants to say the generals agreed with him or were in charge of it. So the other thing I want to say about Rummy is that he comes across sounding so reasonable. You know, he was quite popular, if you remember, at the beginning of the war. In the beginning of the Bush administration, he was unpopular with the Pentagon and getting some bad press because he was trying to change the environment. But then he started giving these press conferences leading up to the Iraq War, and he was so witty and so good at banter. He became like a rock star, and he was holding forth at these press conferences. Well, those days are over. But he does sound reasonable, because when he was interviewed recently about this, he says, not that he made a mistake and he didn't send enough troops. He says, quote, it's entirely possible that there were too many at some point and too few at some point, because no one's perfect. All of us were trying our best to make these judgments, and we were doing it in a context of concern about having enough to get the job done to enable a process, political and economic process, to go forward, and not so many that it persuaded people that we were there to steal their oil and occupy their country, etc. So he sounds reasonable. He goes on to say, in retrospect, I've not seen or heard anything from the other opiners. He loves to call the people that criticize his work opiners. I call them wheelchair generals, you know? In retrospect, I've not seen or heard anything from the other opiners that suggest to me that they have any reason to believe they were right and we were wrong. Nor can I prove we were right and they were wrong. The only thing I have to say is they seem to have a lot more certainty than my assessment of the facts would permit me to have. Well, of course, that's turning the, as Ronald Reagan used to say, there's a real dipsy doodle. Because what Rumsfeld is essentially saying there is that he's not certain about the right course. You know, he's always willing to react to new information, and I'm a reasonable guy. And so these people that are sure I was wrong to go in with so few troops, they have a certainty that I can't afford the luxury of. I have to be able to react, and I have to be mature about this. The exact opposite is what's happened with the Bush administration. They've had certainty all along about the course. They stay the course. It's the right course. We know from this book now that Cheney's basically telling Bush, look, and I'm sure Rove is too, look, you cut Rumsfeld loose, they're just going to come after you. In other words, it's about the politics of it, not are we on the wrong course in Iraq. They're saying, you've rolled the dice this far. Why would you back off? You know, you might be proven true down the road, and then you're a great American hero and a great president, so stay the course and we'll roll the dice further. No, you react to evidence. And that's what's wrong here, is that this administration, you know, a lot of people say they've lied or they've what. No, I don't see it that way. To me, it isn't that the Bush administration has lied to us, although I think that they've cherry-picked the intelligence. I'm willing to say they're incompetent. And that's the most charitable thing I can say about him, is that there's a tremendous level of incompetence here. And I'm assuming the American people have had enough. They were too scared by the politics of it and the ads in 2002 and 2004. It may happen again, but this latest thing tied with the sex scandal I didn't get to suggests to me that this may be the tsunami that will swamp the Republicans the way 1994 swamped the Democrats. We shall see. For more information, tune in next Monday night for the Andy Finn Show. Until then, remember, do it. Don't doubt it.